I'd like to invite our speaker, Jeannie, 24 years in the program, and I hear she's dynamite. Let's give a big rounding applause to Jeannie.
Hi, I'm Jeannie. And I feel so lucky to be here. I go to tiny meetings in West LA during the day that's like all women. A man is a rare sight, and this is really great to see. And the energy, and when someone says you've got a good thing going on, you really do. I mean, I feel like I'm at a party that we're celebrating something. And of course, I am always celebrating something when I come to a meeting. And I will be in the meeting in Al-Anon 24 years, Labor Day weekend. A weekend that never meant anything to me before, but the person who is now my husband was missing for 3 days, and I knew what he was doing, and I couldn't take it anymore, so I called who is now my mother-in-law, who was in San Francisco and had sobriety, and she said that I had to get to an Al-Anon meeting, and I said, but why? He's the one with the problem. And every time I hear a newcomer ask that question, you know, my heart goes out to them. I had been to a few open AA meetings, and, you know, they were like this. And I thought I could sneak into this Al-Anon meeting and be invisible. And I got to the location. I called central office, and there were 8 people sitting in this tiny room. And I went, oh, God, they're going to know I'm here. Now, my eyes were all red. I'd been crying for days. I had a pocket full of Kleenex, and someone said, oh, are you a newcomer? And I thought, how could they tell? Aren't they all miserable all the time? And so anyway, it was a literature study. I had no idea what they were talking about, but I knew these were my people. And I just knew I belonged. And so I came home, and he was there. This had never happened. I had never left my surveillance post while he was out. And then he would come in and pass out, and then I'd go through his pockets, the car, you know, I was going to flush it or, you know. So anyway, he said, where have you been? And then it gets worse. And I said, I went to an Al-Anon meeting. And he said, that's okay. You can go to Al-Anon, but you can't share. And so for a year, I went to 2 meetings a week and did not share. I know. It's like Gloria Steinem needs to do an intervention on me, you know. So, but I thought, oh, isn't that nice? He's letting me go. And so I went to a big meeting. I mean, nothing like this. And I'd been going for 6 months, and I couldn't stand that there were all these people there, and no one was volunteering to take over the literature. And I used to be in retail, so I go, I could handle this. So I did do the literature. So I got to talk to the newcomers. And my first customer was this lovely man who said, you must be so wise to have been given this position. And, you know, I was going to stutter. I mean, I couldn't explain to him. But I figure he'll find out, you know. So he opened up to me and told me his problem. And I had read all the literature. I had to know my material so I could know what to promote to who. And then I quoted things from all the wonderful, wise people I'd heard in the meeting, you know, of people in his situation. Well, I heard someone say, and, you know, so that's kind of, as I'm fantasizing every meeting, someday I'm going to share. And that did get to happen because I went to my little meeting in Malibu, and I was the only person there besides the secretary. And she said, oh, you want to lead the meeting? And I can't say I have other plans, you know. So I thought, how bad could it be? Me and her. Well, of course, you know, in 5 minutes, there were 12 people. And this meeting had old-timers. There were two people there who had 40 years. I mean, this was very threatening. So I told my saddest story, and everybody laughed. And then I realized I had completely lost my sense of humor, you know, which was, like, so important to me. But, like, this was really getting me down, you know. And it was, and, you know, like, I wondered why no one was talking to me after the meetings or anything. If you don't share, nobody knows to talk to you or say anything. And this got me to be part of the group. And it was really fantastic. And, you know, I really needed a sponsor. But I felt like I was, like, up for adoption. And someone asked me to sponsor them. Then the threat was really on. You know, I had to do it. So I got this fabulous sponsor. And she immediately gave me all this homework. I had to call her 30 days in a row and read 3 Gratefuls and 3 Dead Wills. I had to buy all the AA books, all the Al-Anon books, and then I had to read everything on the first step, right? Everything I'm powerless over and everything, you know. It was, like, so fantastic because I really needed that. I really needed direction. I had 2 alcoholic parents that I grew up in La Cunada, and this is where they progressed into their disease. But I can still have fond memories, and it's very beautiful here. And so anyway, I was calling her, reading this stuff, and at this point, my boyfriend had become a periodic. And I had heard a speaker, Elsa C., say that when Chuck C. became a periodic, she went more crazy than when he was using every day. And I know why. Every time there's a sober period, I would have this delusional thing. And every Wednesday, he went out. And I could not figure out what it was till I found out that he had some deal with a doctor and he was renewing some prescription. And so, of course, I called the doctor and threatened to turn him into the AMA. But anyway, that may not be Al-Anon, but I don't care about drug dealers. I mean, you know, they are what they are, but a doctor takes an oath. So I really had an issue about that. But my sponsor helped me through all that stuff. And, you know, it's progress, not perfection. And so anyway, I said, I hate him so much. I can't stand this. You know, I've broken phones and whatever. And she said, why don't you make a deal with him that if he's going to come home under the influence, he calls you and then you can spiritually prepare yourself. And I did that, and he called, like I wasn't going to be able to tell. But anyway, he called and said, you know, he was so loaded. But anyway, I said, oh, okay. So I called my sponsor, and I go, oh, he's so disgusting. I can't believe this and whatever. She said, when he walks in the room, I want you to put your arms around him and tell him you love him. I said, I never took an acting class. I am not capable of doing anything like that. I mean, that I so don't feel that. And she said, he has a disease. He is sick. He needs love. You need to love the unlovable. Well, I'm such a people pleaser that I was only really thinking of my sponsor and telling her that I did it. I was so consumed with that. When he walked in the door and I hugged him, his pain entered my body, and I just cried. I felt so bad for him because I knew he was so sick. And if I hadn't made that contact with him at that time, I mean, that's when I'm locking myself in my room normally and putting furniture in front of the door, which he never, ever tried to get in. So he never knew I was putting the furniture. He was so glad I was out of the room, you know. But anyway, and the look on his face was really worth it, too, because he was so startled that I did that. It was such contrary action, which really, really works. And you know, I broke a pattern there. You know, instead of trying to make the alcoholics in my life feel bad about what they're doing, I loved them through the process, and because I was learning about alcoholism, which is what Al-Anon taught us. And so that was a major breakthrough. And then, you know, he went on another bench, and I decided I couldn't take it. And a friend of mine was going out of town, and she said I could stay at her house. And all I did was I left a note, please feed the dog. And I didn't call. I didn't drive by. I didn't worry. I was, you know, in such a state because of working the steps and learning about Al-Anon. For the first time in my entire life, I knew I was going to be okay no matter what. I had never had that thought or feeling in my life, that no matter what happens, my life depended on whether my parents were happy, if they were going to stay together. You know, I have two addict sisters. I mean, you know, like, I've been busy, you know, worrying about other people. And I knew I was going to be okay. I had serenity. I had peace. And he calls me. Well, he figured out there was only one person still speaking to me, you know, because, you know, it kind of affects your social life being with a drug addict. And so anyway, he said, oh, I'm ready to go to rehab, and would you take me to the airport? And I said, well, I have a commitment at a meeting. I could take you later today. I couldn't believe, this was the thing I'd been waiting for 2 years, and somebody else answered that question for me, that I took care of myself, you know, somebody who let somebody tell them they couldn't share. So I was really doing great. And that was really a fabulous time in my life when he was in rehab, I must say, because I knew where he was and they wouldn't let him use the phone. I was just having the best time. And so anyway, and I knew where he was in rehab up in Napa Valley because my first Thanksgiving with him, we took his father there. Now, it's a progressive disease, so his father was much worse than him. So he thought he looked good and was going to take his dad to rehab, you know. So I met all these fabulous people at the rehab place. I just loved him. A highway patrol woman who used to own a chain of topless bars, going, wow, where would I meet her? This is like so cool. I want to be a highway patrol woman. I could act out my Al-Anon issues and get paid, you know. So I had this cloud nine moment when he came home, you know, and I went to my home meeting, and, you know, they were really worried about me. And I go, oh, he's so, you know, like, everything's going to be fantastic now. And then he started drinking coffee. And I thought it was making him a little odd, so I bought decaf and didn't tell him. And he found out. To this day, he's never let me make a cup of coffee. But I thought, my thing was, oh, I'm never going to bug him about anything again if he gets sober. But it's part of me. I had my first Al-Anon thought when I was 4. I knew something was wrong in my family, and I was sent here to do something about it. And before my parents' alcoholism was even progressed, I had that personality. So I don't blame the way I am on anybody. I really feel that I'm that way. So he decided he was feeling really good, and I was feeling, you know, good about him and everything, so we decided we could get married. So we eloped. His father was drinking. My mother was drinking. We decided this would not be a nice party, and so we eloped to Hawaii and wrote our own vows. There was a song out then by Grace Jones called I'm Not Perfect, But I'm Perfect for You, and so that was kind of like, you know, a humble moment for an Al-Anon to say I'm not perfect. And it was like really a beautiful experience. And we come home and I get the call that my mother had gotten sober. I had totally let go of her. I left La Cunada because I went to live with my grandmother and go to high school near where my grandmother lived because of my mother's drinking and certain situations that were going on. And then I got to have this beautiful experience with my mother, and she came. Then we had a little reception, you know, a few months after we got married, you know, and of course, like, at that time, I didn't even know people's last names. The only people we wanted were people in the program, and my mother came, and I said, well, most of these people, you know, are my friends from the program. She goes, oh, there's nothing like those 10 steps. And I go, oh, my God. She's just going to embarrass me for the rest of my life, you know. So then I got pregnant, and the women in Al-Anon gave me my baby shower. It was so wonderful, even though I didn't have their address to write thank you notes. But, I mean, they made me feel so loved. They knitted little baby sweaters. You know, they were from all ages. They gave me the wisdom to feel well enough to be a parent. And, you know, knowing that he's God's little boy and, you know, he's got his own path. And, you know, it was a very beautiful time for me. And he was a month premature, emergency cesarean. I was in a complete panic. I called my sponsor from the operating room, and her husband answered. The poor guy, he might never answer the phone again. And I go, "You don't understand. I did Bradley Lamaze. I told them I didn't want an IV. I'm like organic. I can't, you know, I'm going to be on morphine. What if he becomes a drug addict?" Because I had to have a cesarean. Anyway, I got past that. And, you know, I would take the Tylenol for the pain afterwards, you know, and I didn't want to tell the nurse why. You know, I had such a panic. Both my parents, both his parents, both our siblings, you know, it was like scary for me because I know it's a family disease. So when he was three, I was asked to substitute a pre-Alateen meeting. And until last summer, I did that for many, many years. And that was like a big gift in my life and my I realized in working my steps, that's how I made amends to myself, because I had nowhere to go with my problems and my feelings about what was going on. I didn't know alcoholism was what was wrong with my family, and I certainly would not have told anybody had I known. And to be able to be there for these unbelievable kids who I learned so much from, and that was a beautiful part of my life. And my son went to pre-Alateen from the time he was 6 till he was 12. And if he wanted to share, I would leave the room. And I really feel that he did learn a lot from that. And, you know, that was a great part of my program. And then, you know, the relationship with my husband, that we both were working a program and my son was in the program. I mean, and my mother was sober and then my sister got sober. It's like when I let go of people, they were able to walk their path. And I remember early on at a meeting, someone said, you know, when we interfere in other people's lives, we're blocking their light from God. I remember the first time I heard somebody say that she was so upset when her husband got pulled over that he charmed the policeman and they didn't arrest him or give him a ticket or anything. And I learned that hitting bottom is a good thing and not, you know, doing for others what they need to do for themselves is not a good thing. And I had done that a lot in my life on all different levels with friendships and everything. So it was really important for me to change that. And, you know, contrary action has been a big thing for me because I really did have a lot of insane behavior. I kept doing the same thing over and over, thinking it was going to be different. When my husband got sober, I just transferred all of those expectations I had for others to other people. And then as my son became a teenager, then I really needed the program again. He was a fantastic kid. He was a scholar, an athlete. He didn't want any part of the drug or alcohol world. He said it has killed our family, and I felt he was old enough to know that when my father was 52, who was a very brilliant, accomplished man, he died of alcoholism. He was dead for 3 days before anybody found him. And I mean, that's a heartbreak in my life that we never, ever mentioned or discussed in my family because it was dark, you know, and you didn't want to go there. So he knew that. And I mean, it doesn't mean that he isn't going to go in any direction, but I felt that he was an Al-Anon from the beginning because when he was three, he came in my room and he said, "Daddy came home. He's got 100 cigars. Let's put him in the trash." And I'd go, "That's my boy, you know?" he's one of us. But then again, my mother and father both had alcoholic parents. My grandfather, my father's father, when my father was 13, he went to the barn to tell him dinner was ready, and he had hung himself. And that's what happens, insanity or death, because my grandmother would not speak to him because of his drinking. So she alienated him, and, you know, they never told me that about my grandfather till my father died when I was 23 of alcoholism. Then I hear what the source of his deep, dark pain, and this is a family disease, and I do want to turn that around. And when we had the riots in L.A., and I've, you know, lived here all my life, and I thought, oh, God, I've got to get out of this place. Or, well, what would they say to you? And Alan and I go, oh, maybe you stick around and make a difference and see what you can do to make it different. So at my pre-Alateen meeting, we go around the room and, you know, we have a little phone book and a phone list, just like you have at normal meetings. And these three little kids that were brothers, two brothers and a sister, said, oh, well, we don't have a phone. We live in a shelter. And I go, oh. And there was another sponsor there, and I went into the bathroom and cried. And I go, God, they sound happy, and they live in a shelter. So anyway, it was run by nuns. Through different coincidences, I found out about this place, and I've been working there for 17 years. And I started an Al-Anon meeting there. It's for battered women and their children, and they're in hiding, and it's the only long-term shelter. But I got to carry the message there. I got to be there for those people on another level, because I really think, and obviously this meeting, you could spend an hour talking about the service commitments going on here. This was unbelievable. All the events you have and all the commitments that people take, it makes such a difference in your life. And so now my son went away to college last year, and really the program had to help me get through that, because, you know, he's my one and only, and I did leave him alone a lot. But, you know, as he became like 16, I was annoying. That was, you know, my adjective for everything. He didn't want to tell me stuff, you know. He has had two girlfriends, both of them family in the programs. Coinky dinky, I mean, you know, it was just... So when he broke up with the first girlfriend, Julia, who loved the Beatles, every time I hear that Beatles song, I start crying. I can't help but experience other people's lives. It's just my nature. And my husband loves to come home from his meetings and tell me the latest Al-Anon joke. You know, you know what happens when an Al-Anon dies? Somebody else's life passes in front of them. And you know why an Al-Anon closes their eyes when they're having sex? Because they hate to see the alcoholic having a good time. And then my friend told me one where it's like this woman is saying, oh, my husband, he's so horrible. He beat me. He didn't pay the bills. And, you know, I don't know where he is half the time. And it's just so awful. And she says, does he have a brother? So, you know, see, only an Al-Anon person could understand that. Because, you know, I used to feel like when I was little, a lot of you are too young to know this, but there was a show called Queen for a Day that I used to watch with my great-grandmother, and the one with the saddest story won. You know what I mean? Those people have been looking for me. You know what I mean? I would hear the most remote, obscure person would tell me, you know, of some tragedy of some person, and automatically I thought, what can I do? How can I help them? You know, it's just my nature. And I had a major heartbreak happen last year that my sister had many years sobriety, went out. Apparently, she thought I didn't notice. But anyway, she did everything. She quit calling me. When I did see her, I was devastated. I didn't say anything, which is the nicest thing I could possibly do. I did not tell my husband, which was really progress. And then she came to an event at my house for some kids and was out there. And my husband, who is a big, tough guy, was such a mouse about saying, you know, did you think she seemed a little different? He didn't think I knew because he didn't want to devastate me. And I go, oh, yes, I noticed. And so 6 weeks ago, she called to confess that she's been out for a year. And I said, really? And I thought, that is what Al-Anon taught me. I'd rather be happy than right. I didn't need, she's suffering enough. She does not need me to say, well, it's been so obvious. You know, that self-righteous thing of wanting. And I go, I have to pray for her. I have to let go of her. And I can write rage letters and put them in my God box. And, you know, my anger is really for my niece. You know, that what my niece must be going through. So anyway, I was able to let go of her. And that was another really spiritual awakening for me. When she told me, not for one second did I have that, oh, what can I do? How can I fix this? What? That was a miracle for me to hear, like, my biggest heartache, my baby sister's out there. And I knew the first step, I was washed in the first step. And it was like such a beautiful thing, because I think really reading and writing about the steps and doing the daily inventory, you know, every day going over your day and coming up with whatever defects. And a lovely man who's in both programs suggested to me at the end of the homework that he saw that I had that I add, how would God have wanted me to handle that situation? And that is also something that I consider a big gift, to open my mind to other people and their suggestions, and how would God want me to handle that? And, you know, my sponsor has a daughter on heroin, and, you know, my heart goes out to her that we help each other through these things. When we came in the program because of our husbands, and then it ends up being about kids or parents or whatever, I didn't even have the light bulb go on about my parents. I was in the program 6 months before I got in touch with my parents' alcoholism. It was based on something somebody shared, and then I really identified with it. So it's so important to me that people share their experience, strength, and hope, because you have no idea the effect you're having on others. Like the osmosis I got from not sharing but being able to hear people. And then I really don't feel I grew and progressed in the program till I started sharing, taking commitments, and, you know, being of service to others, which, you know, here you guys have created such an unbelievable family. Even when you repeat everybody's name, there's humor and laughter and joy. And I mean, where else can you go where you feel like that, where you feel like there's a connection, you know? And the people in Al-Anon have given me, you know, a life that I feel good about. I don't have regrets. When my mother got sober and she said, I'd like you to make a list of everything I ever did that bothered you, and we can go over it. This was my dream come true my whole life. And I go, first of all, there's not time for that list. And I said, you know what? I already worked out all that stuff with my sponsor, so we don't really need to go through it. So that was also, you know, to have that experience with my mother where we're talking about the serenity prayer, you know, I never thought I could have that. And she died with 13 years of sobriety. You know, that was like also something so beautiful to happen in my life. And then I just had a very big high school reunion, and I went to an all-girl Catholic high school. And I haven't seen most of them in the 40 years since we graduated. And a lot of people couldn't afford to do it in a public venue, so I said, well, I'll have it at my house. And what happened is the people who couldn't come were like emailing their bios. So then everybody started doing a bio. And then I decided that it was my obligation of the 12th step to admit that I was in Al-Anon without breaking anyone's anonymity. I just said, you know, a little bit about my life, and that Al-Anon has been the greatest gift in my life. And then another girl mentioned she was recently sober, so we got to have a little 12-step kind of group thing happening. And I mean, you know, there's no way that this disease isn't affecting so many people's lives, and that we don't have to feel alone with it anymore, I think is really great. But I think that's enough for me. So do you open it up for other people sharing or anything?
Leader.
Yeah. If you will, I'll ask people to make comments or ask questions.